Okay, you ready?
I am ready. You got your drink?
Yeah. Do you want to just do it?
And be legends? Yes.
Okay.
Hey, you should move your microphone so it's like right in front of you so you can just like talk into it.
Oh, is that what I'm supposed to do with the microphone? I'm supposed to talk into it?
At some point, you're going to have to learn this.
All right. Well, I feel like I'm already pretty much as legendary as I ever wish to be.
This is true.
I will move my microphone if it means something to you.
Wow.
All right. Boy, oh boy, here we are. It's still this week, isn't it? Isn't it this week?
It is very much this week. It's been a week. Mm-hmm. It has.
I heard something, Damien, not too long ago. Oh, hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast number
33.
Yeah. Thing. Big Ben. I know you're a big fan of Big Ben.
I'm a huge fan of Big Ben. I'm a huge fan of large obelisk type things. I don't know. I can't explain it.
All right.
Bong, bong, bong.
Big Ben is going to be silenced, Damien, for 4 years for maintenance, Damien.
It's a clock.
And it's not, I know, they're complicated.
It's a clock. Not, it's got wheels and springs and stuff.
It's not digital.
You can't just, come on.
Well, anyway, I read the headline and that's what it said it was going to do.
But wait, is this a labor thing? Like, I bet they're going through a union. You get a couple of, like, good old boys, we could get that fixed up.
Yeah. We make it digital. We'll have one of those. It could be like a big slap.
It's
going
to wind the damn thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does it take 4 years to wind it?
Well, anyway, I have a solution for you, though. And I think probably you already know about this, Damien, but not everybody might know. There is such a thing as Big Ben on Twitter.
Yes.
Are you a follower of Big Ben on Twitter?
I think I introduced you to Big Ben on Twitter. I love Big Ben on Twitter.
It's one of the best Twitter accounts that there is because what it does is
it's
every
better
hour.
Than Michael Caine on Twitter.
It's better than Herman Caine on Twitter. At 3 o'clock, for instance, if you happen to be on Twitter at 3 o'clock, then Twitter Big Ben will tweet out "bong bong bong." It makes me laugh every time.
It cracks me up. Sometimes I'm having a bad day and I check Twitter and there's Big Ben going "bong bong 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 bong," and it just makes me feel so much better about everything.
Yep, just one damn thing is in order.
Exactly. Yay, Big Ben. Well, I have exciting news.
Okay.
Big venture here, but I've decided to take the plunge into publishing.
Okay.
And I'm starting my own blog network. I'm not going to be writing from it. I'm just going to be administering it. It's a whole new blog network for Catholics of a particular type of, flavor.
Can you just pause for a second?
Yes.
I will shut off your microphone.
Okay.
I just want everyone to know that I don't know what he's going to say next, and this is all him.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, we're calling it Pathymost.
Okay.
And I've lined up some very exciting writers to write for us.
Uh-huh.
First is Deacon Ted Lacey Bottom. He's not actually a deacon yet. He is studying.
He aspires to be a deacon.
He's waiting. He sent some very personal pictures to a bunch of seminaries, and he's waiting to hear back.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to be writing for us. He used to preach at the Crystal Cathedral.
Okay.
Before he converted. And I asked him about it, and actually he just used to be then he said he was a janitor at the Crystal Cathedral. And then after we dug into it a little more, he spent a lot of time in the men's room at the Crystal Cathedral. But he's going to be writing to us about issues for like gay Catholics on how to lead a life in the church. And I believe his point is really that gay Catholics should not be leading a life in the church.
They should be like...
It's a lot of, they should die. I think is his point.
JMJ.
JMJ, yeah, exactly. But he's going to be going into really detail. I don't think it's for kids.
Okay.
But really detail into certain acts. I haven't read. It seems very important to him.
Yeah.
But anyway, his blog is going to be called Stroke by Stroke, and it's going live on Monday. We also have a gal. She's famous in some circles, Maria LeBlanc, and she's the editor of Latin Living for Kids.
Okay.
The focus of her blog is basically how to be a traditionalist Catholic in the modern world. And she came up with the title. We're still kind of batting it around, but the working title is All Jews Must Die.
It's catchy.
It is. Well, it's kind of a catchphrase for her.
Uh-huh.
And by that, I mean, that's like every other sentence that
she
writes.
Right. Uh-huh.
We've been coaching her up a little bit to sort of expand her views on like topics to write.
Right.
And so I think her first essay for us is going to be called All Masonic Gay Jews Must Die. Okay. But yeah, we're very excited. We've got those writers
lined up.
All right,
who else you got?
John Zmirak.
That's ridiculous.
I know, we couldn't afford him. I mean, let's be honest.
You couldn't afford the lawsuits. Okay.
All right, there we go. I spent way too much time this week working on that.
Yeah, I know. You did it all of 4.5 minutes. While I was
Which is way too much time to get all that way around for that show.
Well, it's okay. I just spent a week's worth of anxiety wondering what you were going to say next. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So, whoo-wee. Okay, I think we can all take a sigh of relief. That was pretty funny. Boy, this is kind of a letdown, but I'm just going to go ahead and plow through because I am feeling exceedingly stupid at this time of night.
Besides
Big Ben on Twitter, there are other Twitter accounts that you might like if you like Big Ben on Twitter. And this is, you can tell that this is a podcast because I'm talking about things, not only am I talking about things on Twitter, but I can't actually remember the name of them.
Okay.
Okay. But there's one that's called something like Endless Screaming or something like that. And every day it's that? Just like, or sometimes, or sometimes,
Now, why would a mother with toddlers in the house need a Twitter account called Endless Screaming?
Well, I guess it's just nice to know that it's like widespread. It's not just
you.
You know,
yeah.
This is the World Wide Web, and it's not it's not only your genetics at play here. And I have one more favorite on Twitter that I currently follow, which is at Death_Reminder, and it's just a cute little, like, hooded, cloaked, what do you call it, Grim Reaper? And every day, it tells you the same thing. You will die someday.
I would like to say only you would describe the Grim Reaper as cute.
No, look it up. It's cute, though. It's as Grim Reapers go.
What was, like your theme word, like, your catchphrase when we first got together way back a million years ago?
Doom. Well,
Doom.
Okay, but I remember...
And then I come home.
There was
home.
A reason for it.
You bring me home to your house to meet your family.
Yes.
And what's the name of your house?
This is called Deepening Dread.
And it's across the street from
a cemetery.
And when I meet your little brother and your little sister and they tell me about the fun games that you play, what's the game that they really love to play with their big sister, Simmy?
All right, it was the dying game, but it was fun, right. Though. It was.
Now, listen,
you know,
I had a messed up
this...
childhood.
Yeah.
But it was not.
But
I don't know what
like
happened.
It was all like Gilligan's Island messed up.
It was. I met Gilligan.
Yeah.
He was very nice.
Okay.
That's all.
I've never seen that show. Is it
worth
watching?
I want to say if anybody, I believe Bob Denver has passed away or he's really high. But in any event, he's a very nice man or was a very nice man.
He was a very nice man.
I don't know. I haven't Googled it.
All right.
But yes.
I just don't, I have no response to that, I guess.
I once saw Alan Hale Jr. when I was golfing.
Oh my gosh, this is giving me flashbacks of talking about meeting people's families. I would go and meet your family and they'd be like, ha ha, did you hear about, and then they'd say all these names of like obscure like sitcom actors from the early 70s that I had never heard of. And I was supposed to like understand the deep significance of what they really meant.
Because they knew them in some way. You
Know? But I didn't.
No one else did. No one else. I don't think they actually knew them, actually.
Well.
But there you go.
Well, there you go. And yet here we are. With hardly any doom. Now with 40% less doom, 40%. I would say.
I would say at least 40% less doom.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
at least
awesome.
Probably more. Maybe 50% less doom.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, we've got something to aim for.
Although
then.
Everybody has to know who Hervé Villechaize is, right?
Yes.
He's Tattoo from Fantasy Island.
Okay. I didn't realize until this very moment that I thought that Gilligan's Island and Fantasy Island were the same.
Not
show.
The same thing. I met Gilligan when he was a guest star on Fantasy Island. When my dad was the executive producer of Fantasy Island.
How was he?
He's a very nice man.
Okay. Now, if you're going to name drop celebrities, you have to say something better than that, though.
But Gilligan was a really nice guy. I was a little kid, and I loved Gilligan's Island, and I got to meet Gilligan, and
That's
it was
nice.
The awesomest thing in the world.
I met Father George Rutler one time. My parents had a
youth. Was he ever stranded on an island for several years with the professor and Marianne?
As Benny said when they asked her what her husband's name was, she said, "I haven't asked him yet." Benny, our five-year-old, is currently married to a dog, apparently. She was telling us all about her husband, that she was having some kind of long, very convoluted, time-consuming game with. And she was complaining that he had eaten the wedding cake before the wedding even started. And I said, "What's his name?" She says, "I haven't asked him yet." And then later it turns out he's a dog. So, I mean, you know, that explains some things, and then it sort of brings up other questions.
It brings up a lot of questions, yeah. Actually.
Yeah. Well, she's going to school. That'll take care of it.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't wait for her to go to kindergarten.
Yeah. Remember when Irene went to kindergarten and suddenly there were a lot of new rules that the teacher was announcing? And we're like,
it was like every week. It was definitely the Irene rules.
New policies based on Irene. We'd never had to address this before, but we've decided that we'd go ahead and
all skirts must stay off your heads. Actually,
the following epithets will not be tolerated.
Consarnet is not a friendly word. She was 5 years old. She would say, "Aw, consarnet."
I don't know where she got. I guess a Yosemite Sam or something.
I don't think she'd even. She's just.
She
Irene.
Just. She. Yeah. She's Irene. Well, she met Yosemite Sam once, you know.
Yeah.
He's a really nice guy.
He is a nice guy.
I was reading. Okay. So Letitia Adams, you know Letitia.
She's great.
Isn't she great?
She's a very nice lady.
She writes for Pathos.
Yeah, very
currently.
Nice lady.
She's a very nice lady.
We're trying to get her for Pathymost.
I don't think she really fits into that particular.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, you know, I know you want to expand your. I'll keep an ear out for you.
Well, you know, if we could get a few people who don't want to kill anybody, that would be great.
All right. That's aim high.
We don't. We pay an exposure.
No, that's where the lawsuits come in. Don't you understand?
Well, this was something that Deacon Ted said we should be doing: is pay an exposure. And then he showed us his pictures.
Okay. So moving along, Letitia has a, she's working on her book, which I'm really excited about because.
I would even buy that.
I know, right? Paperback, yeah. Of course, but still.
Maybe ebook.
Okay. Anyway, I think it's her memoirs. She's had a very interesting life. And the thing that I like about Letitia is that she never says anything that she doesn't completely believe.
Yes.
And, you know, she and Benny are the only two people I know who are like that. And the guy from Gilligan's Island, he's a nice guy.
Bob Denver, he's a very nice guy.
He's an
enormous stoner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's a very nice guy.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to, I hope I wasn't supposed to not say something about that, but I think she said on Facebook. Anyway, she wrote a first draft of her memoir 3 years ago, and then she lost it, and she just found it.
That is
Can
a
you
nightmare.
Believe it?
Isn't that
horrible?
A nightmare.
Because you can't start again.
No.
That happened to my uncle, you know. He was,
Is this the one that invented the holograms?
No, that was my great uncle, and it's not holograms. It was that lenticular, stuff, you know, bullshit. With the lines on it. It's got like a picture and then it's got plastic with lines over it. And when you look at it this way, it looks one way. And then you look at it the other way and it looks another way. He invented that.
Well, where's all the Jew gold from that?
Damien, I don't think you understand. It's not fungible. I told you. I've told you and you can't have a motorcycle because it's mine. You're not a Jew and you have to get your own motorcycle.
But I could get a Triumph like that.
You're going to have to get your own Triumph. Well, my other uncle was writing he wrote his doctoral dissertation, and this is before computers, and, you know, he spent a long time writing this thing, and he put it in a briefcase, and he put it in the back of his car, and he didn't lock his car, and somebody stole it. Isn't that awful? And he was just like, oh, that's it.
That's it.
I'm done. He was just done. It was just, you can't.
You can't.
I mean,
gosh.
You know, you can have happy talk about, well, the first time was a practice and the second time it was painful, but it was so much better. Now I really, no.
There's only so much blood you can put on paper.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then,
that's awful.
Reminded me of something that I was, this is not really related at all, actually. I'll confess it. But I read a thing in Harper's Magazine. This is from like the 80s or something. It's about the author's big mistake. It was a very amusing piece. It was a few pages long, longer than I normally read. It was more than 140 characters, so that was tough, but I powered through it. And he's talking about he's talking about the literary genre of the author's reply. The author's reply is literary genre. This is what it's called. And it was talking about getting bad reviews, and you poured your heart and soul into this book, and you did endless revisions and everything, and then somebody writes a bad review, and you're so devastated and humiliated that you sit down at the typewriter, and you know, if somebody said, "Will you write 1,000 words for free?" you'd say no, but you will sit down and write 1,000 words when you're good and angry with the veins standing out in your head, and you'll send it in. And editors love these things because it creates this drama, and then they want to get the reviewer to write back and respond, and it's just, it's like the worst possible thing you can do. There's no way to come out of that looking good. I've made this mistake a few times responding to criticism in public, and there's no way you
there
end
is
up
no
looking.
Way.
You can go ahead and write it. Just don't publish it or send it to anybody.
Can I have the greatest, can I mention the greatest response to any criticism ever?
Yes.
And this is a little sports wonky. Back in the 70s, a season ticket holder for the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, I know the story.
You know the story. He wrote to the team complaining about a practice of the fans throwing paper airplanes around. And the guy was a lawyer, and he was writing it on legal letterhead.
Mm-hmm.
And he was writing about, somebody could, get their eye poked out, and there could be a lawsuit. And so the Cleveland Browns team lawyer wrote back to him, and I'm going to read it right now. He says, the guy who wrote the letter complaining was, last name is Mr. Cox. And so the lawyer writes back, "Dear Mr. Cox, attached is a letter that we received on November 19th, 1974. I feel that you should be aware that some asshole is signing your name to stupid letters. Very truly yours, Cleveland Stadium Corporation."
Oh, that we still lived in that world.
I love that. That is my favorite letter of all time.
And he probably didn't know. He probably thought that he was, a normal guy writing a normal letter.
Oh, he was an asshole. He was an asshole lawyer. That's what he was. He was an asshole lawyer. I found that first on Deadspin, the sports website, which I have, it's a guilty pleasure read for me.
Well, there's some pretty good.
They have some really
there.
Good
there,
stuff. They've done some really good work. They've done some really shitty work, but that's what it is.
That's
but
how
the,
it is. Yep.
The best part about Deadspin is going on right now for any NFL fan. They have the series. It's like the football season preview called "Why Your Team Sucks" by Drew McGarry. Very funny stuff, and it's he just goes through every day team by team and why it sucks and why it's awful, and it's the NFL, and so he's usually right. I'm just going to read you a little bit about the preview for the New York Jets, and it says, "Did you know the most famous player in franchise history is an alcoholic loudmouth who trashes the team every year and wasn't actually that good? This is the 50th season since the Jets won Super Bowl III. 50 years, man. You got 50 more years of having old-timey footage of Joe Namath running into that stupid tunnel at High Point." I mean, that's the cleanest quote I can come out. I looked at a bunch of them. He starts with the Cleveland Browns, of course, as the suckiest team in the NFL, and just works his way up from there.
Okay.
It's great stuff. I look forward to it every year. I lose
so many. Oh, it's
so
an
many,
annual thing.
It's an annual thing. I lose so many hours of productivity. I wait for daily why your team sucks. Update.
Oh, they put them out
one
at a time.
Day.
Oh,
yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and this is like the first time in years that my team, the Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas Raiders,
really
haven't been in the first in like the first 10 teams because they no longer suck that bad.
Well, this being football, I have nothing to add to it whatsoever. I've heard of some of those things that you just said there. I want to talk about the eclipse a little bit coming up. Do you remember last time there was a solar eclipse?
No.
Really?
No.
Maybe
I don't.
It was cloudy where you were.
I just don't recall.
Oh. Well, I remember it. I remember the thing. I don't remember looking at the, well, obviously I wasn't looking at the eclipse. You're not supposed to look at the eclipse. But I don't remember, like, they didn't have glasses back then. They didn't,
right.
They weren't, nobody was like, I mean, we don't have glasses either because I forgot to buy some and I'm not
I
shelling
almost,
out.
I should
know,
have bought some.
Bucks.
I'm
it's
sorry.
All right. It's all right. It's fine. We'll do that thing where you, like, you put a box on your head and you look at it through a hole or something.
Sure.
Or you put a hole. I don't know. There's a hole. So, okay. Anyway, well, the thing that I remember the most about the eclipse was the weird shadows on the ground. like the light was so messed up, and you could tell it was messed up by looking at the shadows on the ground. It was very otherworldly. It was like being, I don't know, it was like underwater, but it wasn't really pretty. It was just weird.
I'm kind of looking forward to the eclipse. I hope to see something. I'm not going to stare at the sun.
Okay.
Have you seen anything else? I remember as a kid seeing Halley's Comet.
I remember seeing Halley's Comet. We used to go out stargazing a lot when I was little. We would go, my sister had a telescope, and we used to drive out onto Piper Lane, which was very, we lived in a small town, but it wasn't, you know, it was a town. But we used to drive out into this really rural area where there was nothing. You would go out there, there were no street lights. None of the farms and houses had lights on them, and all you could hear was cows rustling around. You'd hear, it would be perfectly quiet. You just hear the crickets and cicadas, and then you hear mooing in their sleep and peeing in their sleep. And you could see the Milky Way like a river going across the sky. It was the most amazing. And this was just a normal night. There was no special astronomical.
There's still no lights out there. We've been to that town since then, since you were a kid in the last few years. There's still no lights out there.
They're good. There should be places with no lights. I mean, it was amazing. And you can see. You can see meteors any day of the year. You know, you don't have to wait for a meteor shower. If it's dark enough, you can see them.
When I was a kid, when we saw Halley's Comet, we were living in Sydney, Australia. And if you look at a map of the bluffs leading into Sydney Harbor, they have like these large cliffs that sort of like create a wall. And we lived on a neighborhood right on one of those bluffs. So we were across the street from a park. And there was a fence at the end of the park. And after the fence, you know, a couple hundred feet down into the ocean. So we were living out of one of those. And we could see the comet out in the sky.
Wow.
Yeah. A strange childhood. But there you
go. Well, everybody saw Halley's Comet. It was small.
It was big and blurry. It was big.
Maybe it was bigger from your.
Yeah. It was pretty neat.
Does that make sense?
It was a little bit anticlimactic because everybody made a big deal out of it. And then you look up in the sky and it's kind of blurry.
Right. It was like, well.
I guess I can see that.
It was strange if you were familiar with the sky and you would see something that's not normally there. And of course, the shape of it too was strange. Did you know that the tail of the comet actually is in front of it, as far as the way that it's traveling? I forget. Somebody explained it to me, and I didn't really understand it. But anyway, it's not streaking out behind it, but it's like leading with its tail thing. So, okay. But going back
so
to
it's
the
a dude.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it. Going back to the eclipse, though, I saw a thing, a big sign that says, "Attention, pet parents." I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, pet parents. On, people who call themselves pet parents ought to be whipped.
You know, we all
like
our
pets. Taken
out
into the
we
public
like
square and whipped.
Yeah. So it has this long, very concerned, it was pretty long for a sign. It was all about, we worry about our children and we worry about everybody putting special glasses on them. But what about our pets? They can have their retinas damaged in a very short amount of time and we should make sure that they're inside and locked up. And I said to myself, first of all, we all know.
Dogs can't look up.
And second of all, even if they could, they don't care about the sky.
If that were true, every dog would be blind.
I know.
Every
dog. There's a guy red on the internet.
What's that up there? Oh, no, I can't see.
Talk about a
non-problem.
I'm going to
look my balls now.
Oh, well, it was my daily chance to feel smart anyway, because I know that dogs can't look up, and that's a fact.
That is a fact. I'm sorry. People who refer to themselves as pet parents or furry parents, are they?
Yeah.
These are my furry babies. They ought to be hit with a sock full of nickels.
This is a theme with you this week, I'm noticing.
Well, just certain people.
I have one more thing to tell about.
Yes.
I want to say Scotland, but I'm suddenly not sure. Maybe Canada. One of those places where they're like...
They're very similar.
Yeah. So basically, this woman... her daughter-in-law is digging in her garden and brings up into the house. She says, "Look at this carrot I found. And it has a diamond ring on it. Not only on it, but it's growing, like it's obviously grown right through it. And the part and it's narrow. And the carrot has continued to grow with outside of the." I'm not describing it well, but it was pretty weird, let me tell you. And she remembers that many years ago she was weeding in that very same garden and lost her engagement ring that her husband had given her, and she was so embarrassed and devastated that she didn't tell anybody about it, and went out and bought a cheap replacement and wore that for the rest of her life. And that was the ring. Karen found it. And not only did this happen, but it had the same thing happened. Because I saw that headline. I thought, that's not a news story. Well, the same thing happened I don't remember where. Somewhere else. The same damn thing happened. Somebody was weeding the garden. She lost her ring. Digging up in the garden years later, and there's the carrot. So I think we should invest in carrots. Right?
That's a good idea.
I think that's a solid plan.
Are you telling me you lost your rings?
No, because my fingers are too fat and they don't come off anymore. No, you know I lost my ring and you bought me another one, so.
I'll buy you another one if you've lost it. I mean, if you keep losing them, I mean.
Well, the second one was nicer than the first one, so I like where this is headed. I don't know. Should I read a poem? Is that everything we wanted to say?
We gotta do the poem.
All right. I read this poem and I couldn't decide if it was any good or not. So you guys can tell me. It's called Faith by Maria Terrone, Terrone. I've never heard of her before, but apparently she's an actual poet. Okay. Boy, I know how to sell it.
Yeah. Okay. Does it need salt?
Yeah, a little bit. In the church vestibule, I pass the monitor that registers the bodies of the faithful as gray flickers, a second of ash on a screen, and heave against the doors. At 3 p.m., no one else is here but saints, corporeal in their sandals and robes, carrying staffs, books, painted bouquets, their kind faces cracking as if they too know how it feels to come apart. Wedged into the fingers of St. Jude is a hand-painted prayer, a paper bud, curled so tight I feel its plea for a miracle tug the back of my throat. Cure the cancer, kick the habit, the ineffable longing of a stranger's words alive on my own tongue. Days later, the hand holds instead a shriveling rose stem. Petals lie scattered about like small white-robed monks, backs arched to heaven, faces pressing stone.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's pretty good.
I liked it. I like the part about their kind faces cracking as if they too know how it feels to come apart. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Okay. Oh. Holy mackerel. I can't believe we got through a podcast. I can't believe we got through this week.
That is the most amount of time with the least amount of preparation.
Yeah, sure.
Podcast wise.
Oh, I thought you meant like our marriage. That
oh,
too.
Oh, gosh. Maybe that's a topic for next week's podcast.
Maybe it is. We could talk about marriage preparation, right? If we haven't covered that already.
Why don't we cover that closer to our actual
anniversary?
Yeah, which is in October.
Yes. October when?
25th.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yay.
I remembered.
Yay.